we'll finish up Esther this evening, hopefully, and then we'll move on next week into Nehemiah, then Malachi, and then we're done. Can you believe it? This was a long study in the Old Testament. I hope you appreciated it. I've really enjoyed it. It's given me a lot of reminders and a lot of things I didn't know before, so I think it was worth our time. Okay, a couple of weeks ago we started the book, and of course the book time frame is right after the children of Israel have returned home. They have built the temple, which two prophets were sent to kind of motivate the people to get building that temple? Anybody remember? Actually, there's three books that cover it, but two prophets. Okay, Zechariah and Haggai, okay? And so we're pushing up now. We're probably about 40 years from Malachi and maybe 15, 20 years from Nehemiah becoming the material in that book beginning. So what's Esther? What's the book? What's the purpose of the book? It's a history book. So it's in one of the 12 books of history. What's it? What is it covering for us? What's it explaining to us? What?
Providence, most likely.
Okay, Providence. All three of those books do, remember? But yeah, Esther is an excellent book on Providence. Rob?
That, and then you can see the connection to the Jews.
Okay, that's right. If Haman had gotten his way, what would have happened to God's promise to Abraham? Wouldn't have been fulfilled. Couldn't have been fulfilled. That's why Mordecai knew. He said, God is going to raise up deliverance from the Jews. Don't know how he's going to do it, but how do you know if you weren't put into the kingdom for just such a time as this? Now, our main characters are, of course, Esther, and then there's the king, and then there's two other people. Anybody want to help me out with that?
Haman
and Mordecai, yeah. And so these are our main characters. Haman's about to make a quick exit from the book. So he's just about finished. And then, of course, Mordecai is going to basically replace him in the position that he had. Now, in our study last time, we discussed the fact that for some reason the king hadn't called her in a month. And, of course, if you're a wife of a king, he doesn't call you in a month. The assumption is that there's something wrong. And so when Mordecai asks her to go talk to the king, what does she say? Yeah, I can't go in there right now. He hasn't called me for a month, and if I go in there and he doesn't raise his scepter, I'll be put to death. And Mordecai feels that the situation is so dire that it's worth risking her life. And so that's what he tells her. He tells her, you need to go in there. And so she asks all of the people in Shushan to do what for her?
Fast and pray.
Fast and pray for 3 days, which that's a long time. One day is pretty rough. You get into the second day, it's even rougher. And the third day, actually around the third day, you just kind of, I don't know, your body, I guess, gives up or something. Doesn't push you quite so hard anymore. So they're all fasting, and she goes in there. And what does he do to show her, not only am I glad you're here, but I'm really glad you're here. Remember what he did?
Give you anything up to half the kingdom.
Okay, up to half the kingdom.
Hold the scepter out, though.
Okay, yeah, he held the scepter up. But then he brings her in and says, whatever you want, up to half the kingdom. And what's her request?
A quarter of the kingdom. No.
Yeah.
She didn't want to go too far.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. I think she got maybe a little more than that even when it was all said and done. She seems to have a lot of authority toward the end of the book. It appears that he's kind of given over to her and to Mordecai a lot of authority. So she asks Haman and the king to do what?
Come to a banquet.
And when they come to the banquet, he says it again, up to half my kingdom. And why do you think she doesn't ask right then? Why does she wait a day? See, nobody has an answer for that. It's very odd, though, that she would do it that way. But she does. She basically says, My request is that you and Haman come back tomorrow. And then we find that, is this a normal banquet? Are they having food? No, it's a banquet of wine. So you remember how the book opened? Where everybody could drink to their heart's content, little or lots or none. And some of this wine obviously would be intoxicating, but some of it would not. So so that pretty much brings us up to where we got to in our last couple classes. So after the banquet, Haman's walking out of the palace, and here's Mordecai. And what does Mordecai not do?
Bow.
Mordecai will not give him the respect that he feels that he's due. And so he becomes so unhappy about it that he goes home and he talks to his wife, his children, his friends, and what does he decide to do?
Gonna kill all the Jews.
Well, no, that's already in play. Now we're up to what are we going to do with Haman? Okay, we're going to hang him.
Gallows.
And is this just a normal gallows?
It's pretty high up there.
Yeah, 75 feet high. Is that pretty high? How many stories is that?
Seven stories.
Okay, that's pretty high up in the air, and everybody could see it. And was he careful about hiding what it was for? No, and so he's put himself into an interesting situation. Matter of fact, even the chief of the eunuchs is going to tell the king, look, you see those gallows over here? That's what Haman was building to hang Mordecai on. So that information had already gone out, and there wasn't anything he could do about it. And so he comes back in the next morning with a specific plan to get the king to agree to hang Mordecai. Does he have any indication that maybe the king won't have any problem with that? What happened the last time he asked the king for a favor like that? Killing all the Jews, as Tim pointed out. You have a problem with it?
Nope.
If you can kill a whole race, can you take out one guy?
Easy.
So he's just made an assumption that the king's going to do that. But unfortunately, that night, the king couldn't sleep. And so what does he ask to be done? He wants them to get the history book and read all the good things that he's done and all the things that have happened in the kingdom. And he remembers a situation where there was a plot to kill him. And the only reason he wasn't killed is because a certain man had brought that information and had those two arrested and put to death. But who was that man?
Mordecai.
So now, is Mordecai on the king's mind? Normally, he wouldn't even be thinking about this. And like I said, there's another act. It could be providence. As I said last week, when we talk about providence, do we talk like we do Acts 2:38? No. God hasn't revealed. He reveals that he does get involved in the world. He reveals that he answers prayer. And I don't think it's unsafe to say that I prayed for this and God answered my prayers. Does he answer our prayers? Do we always know which way it was answered? No. But I think we're pretty safe to say God answered my prayers, unless we know we're a sinner, because what does Proverbs say about it? The prayer of an ungodly man? Virgil?
Abomination.
Okay, abomination.
Even if the prayer was answered in the positive for what we asked for, or if it was not, we didn't get what we asked for, the prayer was still answered.
That's exactly right.
Come to that conclusion.
That's what James, remember James chapter 5?
Yeah.
The fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. So if it's a fervent prayer, and if you're a righteous man, he will answer your prayer. But if you say, God answered my prayer by giving me this, 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 and this, now where are we? See, now we're in a little different situation. So Haman's got the gallows built, and he comes in the next morning expressly and intently planning on asking to hang Mordecai. But as soon as he walks through the door, what happens?
The king has a question.
All right, the king has an interesting question, doesn't he? You know, it's kind of interesting. Twice what Mordecai, what Haman was hoping to do himself was done to him, right? He was hung when he was hoping to hang Mordecai. He was hoping for the glory, but he had to give it to Mordecai. And so God really brought this man down. And so now Mordecai is, he's on the mind of Haman. And so let's go ahead. I had to take the page numbers out because I wanted to get all the material onto four pages. And so it is page 2, but you can't find it. So just turn over one page. And so starting there at the very top, Mordecai's honor. And so let's go ahead now and start looking at some of this material. In Esther chapter 6, verses 1 through 3, Cameron, you want to read that for us?
That night the king could not sleep, so one was commanded to bring the book of records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Tirsha, something like that, two of the king's eunuchs, the doorkeepers who had sought to lay hands on the king, on King Ahasuerus. Then the king said, "What honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" And the king's servant who attended him said, "Nothing has been done for him."
Okay, so now the king has heard this wonderful thing. I mean, if you hear somebody saved your life and you find out nobody did anything for him, aren't you going to say, "Well, let's fix this. Let's fix this right now." So who's in the court, he says. So let's go ahead now and read Esther chapter 6, verses 4 through 6. Brian, you want to go ahead and...
So the king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to suggest that the king hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. The king's servants said to him, "Haman is there, standing in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." Haman came in, and the king asked, "What shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor?" Now Haman thought in his heart, "Whom would the king delight to honor more than me?"
Okay, is this guy kind of full of himself? You know, we talk about narcissism, which means everything is revolving around me. And this guy, he is just the epitome. This is all for me. This is all about me. And so, wow, here's my opportunity to write my own ticket of how I'm going to be honored. And so he thinks about it, and he comes up with an excellent idea. I mean, this is his top idea of how somebody should be honored. So let's go ahead and look at that in Esther chapter 6, verses 7 to 9. Ken, you want to read that for us?
Okay. "And Haman answered the king, 'For the man whom the king delights to honor, let a royal robe be brought which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, which has a royal crest placed on its head. Then let this robe and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most honorable princes, that he may array the man with whom the king delights to honor, then parade him on horseback through the city square and proclaim before him, 'Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor.'"
Okay. All right. So is this guy, I mean, some people would think, give him $100,000, right? But what does he want? What would you classify this?
The glory.
In the pride of life, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes. What does he want here?
Pride of life.
He really, really wants the pride of life. He wants everyone to know that I am one of the greatest people in the kingdom. And so this was a very, very important thing. I mean, the people that come into that court are going to be the some of the most important people in the world. And so he wants everybody to know how great he is. And so, and then the whole world starts to crash down with the next one.
A heartbeat.
Yeah. Carl, you want to read that verse there, Esther 6:10?
"Then the king said to Haman, 'Hurry, take the robe and the horse as you have suggested, and do so for Mordecai the Jew who sits within the king's gate. Leave nothing undone of all that you have spoken.'"
Oops. You know, it's hard not to laugh. I mean, this is not funny. But you read it, you just go, the irony here. The irony of it. You remember Jesus saying, "With what manner you judge, you shall be judged." And that's exactly how it works out here. The judgments he was hoping to get end up coming, one comes on Mordecai, and the other, excuse me, and the other comes right down on him. So I can just imagine his mouth must have dropped open, or his heart must have dropped to his toes. I mean, he must have just absolutely, and of course, what can you do? I mean, he's come in there to ask for this man to be hung.
I have a better idea.
And now he's got to honor him, and is he going to have any chance of getting him hung now? I mean, after he finishes this, can he come in there and say, look, we need to hang this guy now? No, it's not going to happen. But, as I say, he's put his own, talk about an idiom here, he's put his neck in the noose because he starts building this monumental gallows, and then when people are asking, what's it for, what's everybody saying? To hang Mordecai. Like I said, the guy, the chief of the eunuchs, has also heard of this. So this is Haman's in big trouble. All right, so let's go ahead and turn the page. Oh, okay, I see. I skipped over the... So anyway, he does that. He gets the horse. He goes back and forth, and then he goes home, and he starts talking to his family. So this is kind of a longer reading, Tim, but if you'd read that for us, please, 11 through 14.
So Haman took the robe and the horse and arrayed Mordecai and led him on horseback throughout the city square and proclaimed before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Afterward, Mordecai went back to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house, mourning and with his head covered. When Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that had happened to him, his wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him. While they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs came and hastened to bring Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared.
Okay. Now, this is something we'll bring out a little bit more later, but Haman never gives who the people are that he once put to death. He says, there is a people scattered among your empire, and they don't fit in with anyone. Now, is that true? Is there a people spread out? Yeah. Do they fit in? Do they assimilate into the culture? No, they have a law. They have systems, and of course, that's why Mordecai won't bow down to Haman. And so the king doesn't know who these people are, and it appears from here that does his family know who they are? Because they say, notice in verse 13, if Mordecai, before you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent. So let me restate the question. Did they know before this that he was of Jewish origin?
Yes, not.
And it appears, well, you think so?
Well, the king knew, because with the passage we just read, he talked about Mordecai the Jew in verse 10. But as far as the people...
Okay, it's just an odd way. The reason I'm asking, because I looked at it too, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent. Now, normally if you say if, so maybe they knew, and maybe you could translate it since. But you got to think back now. Remember that... you remember the lion's den?
Yeah.
This was the first king of the Medo-Persian Empire. And Daniel was opposed by all of the leaders. And what happened? They threw him in the lion's den. He comes out the next morning, and then what happens to everybody else?
They get thrown into there.
And I don't think the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would be too far gone yet. That might have been 30 or 40 or 50 years back. But the Jews have a history. Daniel, those dreams. And so these people have a certain attitude. And you remember Ezra? Remember how Ezra was sent off by the king to go to Jerusalem? And he was made the governor. And he was told, you go there and you make sure that you build this house and you do everything that God wants you to do so that this will redound to the benefits of the kingdom. So this isn't something that they wouldn't know about. This was something that was known. And so now these people, and is this good counsel? You think, well, where were they before he did this? It's a little bit late now. So at that moment... he's being taken off. You ever get bad news And you're just so shocked that you can hardly think properly. And what you need is a day or two to kind of ponder this and work your way through it. But what happens immediately? Here comes the messenger taking him to Esther. And so he's got nothing. And he knows if the king finds out what those gallows are for, am I going to be in trouble? Yeah, so he's really concerned. Well, we get to the banquet, and he doesn't, it just appears he doesn't really get any time at all. So let's look at chapter 7. Where did we finish? Jeff, you want to read that for us? 1 to 4?
Verse 4. Okay. So the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther, and on the second day at the banquet of wine, the king again said to Esther, "What is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Up to half the kingdom? It shall be done." Then Queen Esther answered and said, "If I found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me at my petition and my people at my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss."
Okay. So here we find the line where if it had only been selling, I wouldn't have had to put my life on the line. I wouldn't have gone in and talked to you about this. But and these words are actually in the decree that Haman sent forth, to be killed, to be annihilated, to be destroyed. And so there isn't supposed to be anybody, and they're very clear, women, children, and after you've killed them all, take their possessions. And so she's deeply concerned. And, of course, the king is so happy with her right now. The thought that somebody would try to kill her, what's that going to do with? The king's not happy. So let's look then at that next verse, chapter 7, verses 5. Richard, can you read that one for us, please?
So king,
I can't pronounce it either. Don't worry about it.
Answers and says to Queen Esther, "Who is he and where is he? Who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing?" And Esther said, "The adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman." So Haman was terrified before the king and queen. Then the king arose in his wrath from the banquet of wine and went into the palace garden. But Haman stood before Queen Esther, pleading for his life, for he saw that evil was determined against him by the king.
Okay, you think we got some worldly sorrow going on now? Maybe a little repentance? Not the kind, proper kind of repentance, but he's doomed now. He's put himself into a terrible, terrible situation. And again, it's interesting. It's interesting how God can work these things. How that this individual who had put himself in the position to want to destroy the Jewish people, and so Esther comes in and she makes it personal. She doesn't say he wants to kill my people. What does she say? Mm-hmm. He wants to kill me and my people. And is that true? Yeah. Now, unfortunately, what did Haman not know? If he'd have known she was a Jew, he would have been a little more careful. But no, he's going to kill them all, including the people in Shushan. And so as soon as they find out that Esther's a Jew, they're going to put her to death. And is it lawful? Yeah, it was lawful to do that. That's exactly what Haman had asked for. And that's exactly what the signet ring had been stamped to. And once it's stamped, can you change it?
Nope.
It's in stone. And so at this point, she is just being honest with the king, and she calls him three things. She calls him an adversary, an enemy, and a wicked man. And when you think about it, when if you write a decree, kill all the women, all the children, and the entire nation, is that pretty wicked? Obviously, he's an enemy. Charles?
Yeah, I was just noticing this part right here. Where it says, "But Haman stood before Queen Esther." Okay? It seemed like he's pleading before Queen Esther instead of the king.
Yeah.
So,
or do you know what the king was going
to really do? Really, I could be pleading to, for the king, because the king was the one who was going to do what he did. You know?
Well, he, you know, he's this guy's a hothead, and Haman knows it. And once he's in this situation, he probably knows I can't reason with this guy. I mean, when somebody's angry, is that the best time to try to get them to change their mind? So the best thing to do is get the cooler head to prevail. So he's in there. The king's rushed out. He's so mad. He's thinking back and forth, what am I going to do here? How am I going to deal with this? Because has he been duped?
Yeah.
See, the king has actually been duped into thinking that he was maybe dealing with the lower echelon, some nation that had really very little value, which, you know, I'm sorry to word it that way, but that's how people look at certain things. But when he finds out it's the Jews, man, he's not happy at all. And so so the Haman is pleading, and as he's pleading, he falls down to beg. Maybe gets on his knees, I don't know. But unfortunately, he slips or he falls over. And when the king comes back in, he's laying right next to the queen, which when you're already angry, doesn't. And so he makes the point, and some translations have, will he force the king? This one has, will he assault the queen? But the basic idea here is he going to take advantage of my queen while I'm not in here? And is that really fair?
No.
But is this king in the mood to be fair?
No.
And so it's sad for Haman, and of course, if he'd been on God's side, God might have intervened, but he wasn't. So let's go ahead and look at that last verse at the very bottom, Esther chapter 7, verses 9 and 10. Rob, do you read that for us, please?
Harbona, one of the eunuchs, said to the king, "Look, the gallows, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on the king's behalf, is standing at the house of Haman." Then the king said, "Hang him on it." So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the king's wrath subsided.
Okay. So God is not mocked. Whatever a man shall sow, that shall he also reap. And we need to keep that in mind, especially when it comes to taking vengeance. Paul's very clear in Romans chapter, 13 on that? Give place to the wrath of God. Do not take vengeance. Do not intervene in whatever plans God has. All right, any thoughts so far? Okay, then let's go ahead and turn to the last page. And so now we've gotten rid of the wicked adversary. Well, what's the problem? We have a law that we can't change. And so there's nothing we can do about this. And so now we've got to come up with a plan. And apparently it took them a few days to come up with a plan, because although Esther, let's go ahead and read the next section, then I'll tie this back together. Let's see. Virgil, you want to read that one? Esther 8, 1 through 1 and 2, very top of page 7.
Okay. On that day, King Ahasuerus gave Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told him, or told how he was related to her. So the king took off the signal ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther appointed Mordecai over the house of Haman.
Okay. So the signet ring that Haman had used to stamp the decree, now who has it?
Mordecai
has the ring, and Mordecai now has a double benefit as far as the king's eyes are concerned. First of all, he saved his life. Now he finds out that all the that he loves in his wife, where did that come from? Who raised her? Mordecai raised her. So he makes a decision to raise this man up. So he gives him that signet ring. Now, a signet ring means something that you can push into the wax on a paper and give it the authority. So this isn't just a pretty ring. This is a ring signifying power, signifying the ability to to bring the king's laws into a condition where they can be sent out all over the world, and people will know this didn't come from anyone else because of this particular signet. And so now Mordecai has been given... Go ahead, Carl.
Well, contributing to the signet ring thing, in those days, any decree that the king or his his authorities would send out, they would wrap the paper with the message on it and put a piece of wax on the where the paper came together.
Right.
And then put the signet into that wax, and that could not be broken until the one who was going to receive it.
Right. Yeah, and we'll see this in just a few minutes. There's 127 provinces, and there are many different languages, and it's kind of interesting how it's worded. There are different scripts, which means, are there different alphabets in the world? And so, I can't read Spanish, but because it's the same letters, can I read it? I don't have a clue what I'm reading, but can I read it? Yeah, I can read it. When I go to Malawi, I can read it because they use English characters. Now, I have no idea what they say, but I can sing along with them because I can read the words. But if I go to India, what am I going to do?
Got a problem.
I mean, it just looks like scribble.
Yeah.
And so that's what has to be done here. And so as these people, this information is coming out, how are you sure that it came from the king? It's going to go all the way from India to Ethiopia. I don't know if you can visualize that on a map, but that's a huge mass of land to go from India all the way across. Of course, Jerusalem is going to be in there, and then Egypt, and then all the way around to Ethiopia. And there's 127 provinces. How are you going to make sure that these people aren't duped into thinking that they're doing something when the king didn't want it done? So that's why Carl makes an excellent point. They put the wax on there, and this signet ring is not something that can be easily duplicated. And so now he's got this ring. And as I mentioned earlier, it appears that they don't have a plan yet, because in that next verse, Esther chapter 8, verses 3 through 6, she comes in again, and he has to lift the scepter again. So she's gone back in a second time to ask him, and once again, he makes, excuse me, he's ready to help her. So she makes the point that Haman's been taken care of, but we have to solve this other problem. So in verse 5, since we're just about out of time, I'll just scan through this real quick. Verse 5 says, "If it pleases the king, if I have found favor in your sight, and the thing seems right to the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes." Does it sound like she's buttering up a little bit here? And making sure that he knows this has got to be your idea. This is just a suggestion. And so, "let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman." So now we've got to take care of this. And it looks like I did not properly gauge the time. So I'll tell you what, we'll just talk a little bit about this next Wednesday night. And then we'll move into Nehemiah. All right? Thanks.